such an attractive figure. And she's always so full of energy. You'd never guess she has two children.
Jill says it's Ford pills that keeps her so fit. She gives them to all of us.
Yes, in the olden days of black and white TV, you could take a pill to make you fit. If you were too fat, too fat, too fat, Ford pills would get you looking trim and healthy. But are the trimmest looking people necessarily the healthiest? Can you be fat and fit? On RN, this is The Body Sphere. I'm Amanda Smith. Is the relationship between body weight and health as simple as saying leaner is better for health and longevity? Carl Levee is the author of The Obesity Paradox. He's a US cardiologist and medical researcher joining us on Skype from New Orleans. Now, Carl, can you first of all describe the trend that you started to see in your research and as a cardiologist 10 or so years ago?
Yeah, absolutely, Amanda. My colleagues and I were involved with some research that, no question, has been very confusing, and it's been surprising to me as a doctor, and I think in some ways has turned conventional wisdom on its head. And what our research, I think, has clearly shown is that thinner is not necessarily healthier. And this is in contradiction to what many people and I think what many doctors have preached for a number of decades. And our research was specifically in patients with cardiovascular diseases. And interestingly, we know that overweightness and obesity are very strong risk factors for cardiovascular disease. They worsen the blood pressure, increase glucose values, worsen plasma lipids or the blood fats, increases levels of inflammation. And there's no question that overweight and obese develop more heart disease. They develop more hypertension, more coronary heart disease, more heart failure, atrial fibrillation, which is a very common rhythm disturbance. But despite the adverse effects of overweightness and obesity to increase the prevalence of cardiovascular diseases, we've been finding that once our patients develop cardiovascular disease, that the overweight and obese are actually having a better prognosis. Sometimes 30 to 50% lower mortality rates than all the lean patients. And that's basically the obesity paradox in a nutshell.
So you're really crediting a positive side to fat.
That is the obesity paradox. And in fact, we've published papers in our heart failure patients, and I had trouble getting this data published in the early 2000s. But in the early 2000s, in a group of bad heart failure patients, we showed that the people who died had lower body mass indexes and had lower body fats. And we actually showed in that paper that was published in the 2003 American Journal of Cardiology, that for every 1% increase in body fat, there was 13% improvement in survival in bad heart failure patients. And later, we published several papers in cohorts with coronary heart disease, you know, blocked arteries, that showed that the patients who had higher body fat lived longer than those who had low levels of body fat. And in fact, a low level of body fat was an independent predictor of mortality.
Of course, what you ideally want is to not be in the weight category that puts you more at risk of heart disease in the first place, rather than having a better survival rate once you've got it. However, this is where another factor comes into play. Carl Levee takes his lead on this from an exercise science colleague.
His name is Dr. Stephen Blair. He did his research at the Cooper Clinic in Dallas, Texas, and he was the key author and the lead author of the Aerobic Center Longitudinal Study. He's published numerous papers, and I've published a number of papers with him during the last several years, but he's published numerous papers about the fatness versus fitness debate. And basically, to sum this up, his research shows that the thin people who are not fit have very high mortality rates. And in fact, the overweight and obese who are fit have considerably better survival than do the thin who are unfit. Now, you might say, well, how can somebody who's heavy be fit? Now, there's no question. Typically in our society, as we become adults, we typically gain weight and lose fitness. Well, the research shows that if you're going to give up one of those, you'd be much better off gaining weight and remaining fit, because fitness is more important than fatness regarding long-term healthy outcomes. And another way to look at this, there's data that we've worked on that has looked at changes in weight and changes in fitness over many years. And both worsening in fitness and gaining a weight were associated with increased mortality. But once you corrected for fitness, there was then no relationship between weight gain and subsequent prognosis. The bottom line is that if you remain fit, it really doesn't matter so much what you weigh. We also show that in our heart failure patients and our coronary patients, that fitness is the most critical factor for predicting prognosis. Among the unfit patients, the thin do worse than the heavier patients. And so the obesity paradox is particularly applicable when you put it in combination with fitness. And when I'm talking about fitness, let me explain something. I'm not talking about people who can run marathons. I'm talking about 30, 40 minutes of physical activity a day, meaning like walking, elliptical machines, cross-country ski machines, bicycles, swimming, all of those types of aerobic exercise.
Certainly what's interesting in what you're saying is that, in spite of all the medical advice that's been around for years for people to lose weight, despite the whole diet industry and so on, we are generally speaking remarkably unsuccessful at losing weight. It's not a battle we're winning individually or collectively on the whole.
Yeah, and many of these people who are packing on, 20, 30, 40 extra pounds, 10, 15, 20 extra kilos, many of these people have tried a number of times to lose weight and been unsuccessful. I'm not trying to keep people from losing weight, but if they're trying to lose weight to live longer, they would be much more successful and helpful for their survival is if they got themselves out of the low fitness category. And another way to look at this is, if you look at a person who's thin and you say, and a person says, well, they're lucky and automatically think that they're healthy, that's not necessarily the case. In fact, a person who is thin but who has low muscle mass and is not physically active and has a low level of fitness has a very unhealthy profile. And in fact, the overweight and obese, mildly obese, who's fit, has a much better prognosis than this thin person with low muscle, low physical activity, and low fitness.
And Carl Levee is a cardiologist and the author of The Obesity Paradox. Details for it are on the Bodysphere website at abc.net.au/rn. Okay, so let's talk more about fatness and fitness and paradoxes. Timothy Olds is Professor of Health Sciences at the University of South Australia.
Yeah, it certainly is counterintuitive. We all think that if people are leaner, they're going to live longer, but it's not the case. There's been a whole slew of studies over the last 5 to 10 years, which have shown exactly the opposite. We always know there's a U-shaped relationship between fatness and all-cause mortality, so that the chances of people dying is least. It reaches a bottoming out in somewhere in the middle range. So we know that people who are very lean or very fat are more likely to die young. But it turns out that the very bottom of that U is in the overweight range, right in the middle of the overweight range, with a body mass index of about 27. And this has been confirmed by many studies in people who are both healthy and unhealthy. So it is a tremendous surprise, but the evidence is extremely strong.
So as far as public policy goes then, how would you want to, using that evidence, redefine fat and fitness, weight and health?
Well, yeah, I guess what it means to me is if someone's grossly overweight, if they're in the obese range, so we're looking at 85 to 90 kilograms for an average-sized woman and 95 to 100 kilograms for an average-sized man, then the advice to lose weight is good advice. But I think they're just in the overweight range with BMIs somewhere between 25 and 30, then I think the public policy message should be, look, just live a healthy lifestyle. Do the sort of things we've been telling people to do for the last 100 years. Eat fruit and veggies, whole grains, get enough sleep, try to reduce stress, get a bit of exercise. Because I think there's a lot of collateral damage in telling people to lose weight when we know that people are not very successful at losing weight and it doesn't really make much difference for their health outcomes in that middle range.
Relax a bit and focus on getting fitter instead?
Yeah, that's what I'd be saying. Unless you're really in the obese range, unless you really are grossly overweight. So the basic message is, and I'm not saying that weight's not important, I'm not saying that weight's not related to disease, but I am saying that if you're in the overweight range, the emphasis should be on a healthy lifestyle rather than losing weight.
On RN, this is The Body Sphere with Amanda Smith. Now, the thing is, as you well know, there are all sorts of positive qualities attached to being thin, especially for women. It carries a kind of social status, it's equated with attractiveness and with the assumption of health and fitness. Kate Fridkus is a New York writer and blogger, and she's the author of an article for the Daily Life section of the Fairfax newspapers that caught my eye. It's called Things You Get Away With by Being Skinny. Kate is in her 20s. She's not unwell, but she was quite possibly headed that way.
So I guess I've always been pretty thin. And even saying that sounds a little bit like bragging to my ears, which is partly why I wrote this article. But when I was in college, I remember getting positive attention from both men and women. And dating a guy who was impressed with my physique and said, oh, you must really work out a lot because you're thin. You know, I had thin legs or whatever. You must be a runner. And I was not a runner at all, and I had never exercised in my life. But I got these compliments nonetheless.
So what impact did other people's perceptions, you know, for example, that you must be really fit, have on you?
Well, it made me feel really good. And I remember being a young girl and getting these compliments from older women. I'm so jealous. You're so thin. And being a little bit confused about that at first because I hadn't learned just how important it was to be thin. But that became very clear to me very quickly, as it does to most people. And then later on, feeling relieved that I was naturally thin because I began to feel self-conscious about other aspects of my appearance. And I thought, thank God, at least I'm thin.
So when did you start to think that maybe you weren't so fit and healthy as you appeared to be or as other people told you you were?
I think I suspected it whenever I tried to do anything athletic. There I'd be sort of panting on the sidelines. But these concepts of thinness and health and fitness were so conflated, so mixed up together that people would say things to me like, oh, well, you don't need to work out. If I said, well, I don't work out, they say, well, you don't need to work out, as in you already look like you do, so it's irrelevant.
So what about medical advice?
As I got older, I went to the doctor and the doctor said, you know, your heart rate is pretty high. You should really do some type of cardio exercise. And it was easier to dismiss that advice because I had, over the years, had so many people say to me, you don't need to exercise, as though I'd already accomplished any goal that exercise might have, as in I already looked the way that you're supposed to look after you've exercised. Actually, a pretty dangerous and at the very least stupid idea.
Well, I think you did have a go at running when you were first dating your now husband.
Yeah, so when we were first dating, he said, do you run? And a lot of people had said that to me before. And I said, no. And he said, well, would you like to go running with me? And I said, sure, why not? And I'd actually never really tried running, which is sort of embarrassing to admit. But I went, I started off running really fast because I didn't know what I was doing. I just took off like a rocket and left him in the dust. And he called after me, "You're really fast." And he was impressed. And then a few blocks later, I was in pain and I felt like I couldn't breathe. And I felt like, you know, my organs were being crushed. And it was incredibly humiliating. And I had to stop. And he said, "Oh, you really don't run." I said, "No, I really don't." And it became painfully, literally painfully clear to me that I was very much out of shape. And of course, I had been for a while. It was driven home in an embarrassing way.
This is, as you're saying, that you had for so long absorbed and believed the response that you always got from other people, and so ignored the need to exercise and eat well.
Exactly.
At that moment, did that shift?
It shifted gradually over a number of years as I began to think about and write about beauty and body image and ask some more questions about the way that thinness became synonymous with many other positive qualities in a person, including healthfulness.
The reverse corollary to this, of course, is that if you're not lean, you must be unhealthy and unfit. Now, your husband, in fact, belies that. He's a kind of big bloke, yeah?
So, yeah, my husband is a good example. He is a big guy, and he is very physically fit, but we'll say it's sort of ashamed of himself. "Oh, my BMI is too high and I'm technically obese." And I've heard many people say this: "I'm technically obese." I'm sort of embarrassed, ashamed, as though they are failing. People who are, in fact, perfectly healthy and can run a lot farther than me.
So do you go running with your husband these days?
No. Honestly, I still can't keep up with him. But I do walk a lot. That's something that I try to get out and do every day now and just try to make sure that I'm not eating pizza with quite the regularity that I was before, just in an effort to keep my insides in order as well.
It's so interesting, isn't it, this whole idea of the unhealthy thin.
All you have to do to notice it is pick up a women's magazine and you see all of these articles that purport to be about fitness, but which are very transparently about weight loss. The emphasis is too often put on our dress size, waistline. It's really important to separate the concepts of thinness and fitness, because when we mix them up and encourage people to get thin instead of to get healthy, people will find so many other ways to get thin that are unhealthy.
And Kate Fridkus is a New York writer. There's a link to her article, "Things You Get Away With by Being Skinny," on the Bodysphere website, and a link there also to her blog, which is called "Eat the Damn Cake." An interesting study that Timothy Olds and his health science colleagues have undertaken is to compare how real people measure up against ideal and imaginary people.
We had a look at a whole range of bodies. We had a look at the average bodies of young women, young Australian women in their 20s and 30s. Then we had a look at catwalk models, at supermodels. We just got their data from the web. Porn stars, same thing there. And we also had a look at shop mannequins and Barbie, the doll Barbie. And we blew Barbie up to life size. And we compared these bodies right across the spectrum from your real young women to these sort of hyper-ideal bodies of Barbie. And you can see that they vary in two ways. Firstly, as we move across that spectrum of ideal bodies from real young women out to Barbie, they become thinner and they become more shapely, more curvy. But of course, in the real world, those two things work against each other. So if you get a young woman who's very thin, she's unlikely to be very curvy. Alternatively, you get someone who's very curvy, then they tend not to be very thin. So it's unusual to get both of those together, and yet the ideal body has both of those. In the extreme case of Barbie, we estimate that if she were at life size, she'd have a body mass index of 14, which is sort of starvation levels. She'd weigh about 45 kilograms, and some of her dimensions would be just completely impossible.
Well, years ago, the comedian Wendy Harmer did a routine where she demonstrated that if Barbie was a real person with those tiny, tiny feet and that enormous bust, well, she wouldn't be able to stand up. She'd fall flat on her face.
That's absolutely right. In fact, Barbie's feet are 17 standard deviations below the mean. They would occur naturally perhaps one in every trillion cases, so they're completely impossible. And her chest-to-waist ratio is almost equally improbable.
What about G.I. Joe? You've done some measurements on him too, I think.
Yeah, G.I. Joe and some of the other dolls. But one of the interesting things about G.I. Joe is how it's changed over time. So G.I. Joe, an action figure, not a doll, Amanda, was released first in the 1960s. And there's been some studies having a look at how G.I. Joe's proportions have changed over that time. So between the 60s and the 90s, G.I. Joe's chest increased by 20%. His chest-waist ratio increased by 40%. And his biceps girth increased by 120%. So these unrealistic figures are not just impinging on girls' pictures of themselves, women's pictures of themselves, but more and more on young men and boys' pictures of themselves as well. So we're being surrounded by this sea of not only images of women now, but images of men as well.
The interesting thing with the men, though, in relation to G.I. Joe, the action figure, is that it is actually, in a way, about unrealistic muscle. It's not unrealistic leanness, it's about unrealistic muscle. So it is a bit more to do with fitness than look, at least.
Yeah, though, I guess what worries me about all this is that it drives a kind of anxiety and insecurity about the body, and that drives extreme body behaviours. So we're seeing now a big upsurge in the number of young men taking anabolic steroids, for example, in order to become muscular. Now, we know that has very bad long-term consequences in terms of risk of cancer, risk of cardiovascular disease, let alone the psychological problems associated with it. So I think when we're exposed to any of these hyper-unrealistic images of bodies, representations of bodies, it's likely to drive very unhealthy behaviours.
Well, now, for a long time, the body mass index, the BMI, which you've referred to, it's been used to measure and categorise people as underweight or overweight or obese. And just quickly to explain, your BMI is your weight in kilos divided by your height in metres squared. Now, the BMI is often criticised, Tim, as a fairly crude measure because, well, for one, it doesn't take account of your muscle mass or lack of it, does it?
No, it doesn't. And on the individual level, we can't have a great deal of faith in BMIs. It's great on a population level. We know that on average, at a population level, people with high BMIs have high levels of body fat. People with low BMIs can have low levels of body fat. But for individuals, we don't necessarily get that pattern. You can imagine an individual, for example, with a very high muscle mass. If you think of people on the Australian rugby team, for example, all of them would be classified as overweight or obese. But of course, they're very lean. On the other side of the coin, we've got people, very often young women, for example, have quite high levels of body fat, but are still very thin because they've got a very low muscle mass. So it doesn't apply across the board. It can vary.
BMI also doesn't take account of where your fat is stored, you know, around your belly and organs or around your thighs and buttocks, which makes a difference to your health.
Yes, you're quite right. It doesn't look into body fat distribution. And we know there are strong associations between the distribution of body fat and the risk of cardiovascular disease and diabetes and the like. It's more dangerous to put on fat around your middle than around your thighs and hips. And although a lot of women don't like it, it's actually protective to have fat around your thighs and hips.
Is there any better measure for categorising people as being a healthy or unhealthy weight?
Well, there are gold standard measures for measuring how much fat a person has. The gold standard at the moment is called DEXA, which stands for Dual Energy X-ray Absorptiometry. It's a long word, but essentially what happens is you lie on it looks a bit like an operating table, to be honest, and they pass through your body X-rays of different strengths. And the weaker X-rays are blocked by fat and muscle, and the stronger X-rays are blocked by your bone. So they can tell what type of tissues you have inside you. And from that, they can estimate with great accuracy how much body fat you have. But it's an expensive method. It needs a trained technician. And, of course, you're exposed to radiation, which has its own dangers.
Yeah, it's not really an easy measure that you can use.
No, it's not the sort of thing you do in your lounge room.
Mm. How reliable and realistic are people at judging their own weight category anyway?
People are pretty poor at judging not only their own weight category, but the weight category of their children. So people will almost always underestimate their weight. So if they're in the overweight range, they'll tend to think of themselves as being normal weight. If they're obese, they'll tend to think of themselves as being overweight, and that same applies to their children. There are exceptions, of course. You know, people with anorexia, for example, tend to exaggerate their fatness, but on the whole, they underestimate. Now, you know, a lot of researchers have seen that as a problem, but what I think is really going on here is that the technical definition of overweight simply doesn't match our day-to-day understanding of what overweight is. So technically, a lot of people who are classified as overweight, if we saw them in the street, we'd say, look, they don't look very overweight to me, they look normal weight.
Yes, I mean, what you're saying really is that generally ordinary people are a bit more accurate than the sort of medical scale in a way.
In a sense, that's the right way of looking at it, that people are right in saying that, well, okay, if you're the weight which I consider to be normal, which you consider to be overweight, is the weight at which people are least likely to die. But remember, it's also that's the weight at which they're more likely to get cardiovascular disease and diabetes.
Which is what makes this so confusing and controversial. And the problem is, Tim, the take-home message with body shape and health, it's complicated, isn't it? And now add in this obesity paradox, it becomes contradictory as well. Whereas, for example, say with smoking, you know, it's a straightforward public health message to say every cigarette is doing you harm, so stop now. That's not the case with weight and eating and fitness, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. There are complex behaviours which determine your weight and your body shape. So while we can say every cigarette is doing you harm, we can't say every hamburger is doing you harm. It's hard to know exactly how much exercise one person should do. So because your weight really is the integration of a whole lot of complex eating behaviours and health behaviours, including sleep and stress and things like that, it's really difficult to get a single message out about weight. And that's why I think we really shouldn't focus on weight. We really should say, look, just follow a few basic changes to your lifestyle in terms of your diet and your stress and your sleep and your physical activity. That's really what we should be emphasising.
And Timothy Olds is Professor of Public Health at the University of South Australia. I heard this quite handy phrase the other day that goes along the lines of something being the new something else. In this case, it's that strong is the new thin. That seems to me to be quite a good reconceptualising of the ideal body, in that it's not about how you look, it's about your capacity. What do you think? Strong is the new thin. And reminding you that Life Matters on RN has a fitness challenge continuing over the next few weeks that you can join in on, and also that a two-part obesity special is coming up on the Health Report. A range of news and views and activities across RN programs. Remember, you can download or stream this program from abc.net.au/RN. Choose the Body Sphere from the list of programs and you'll see what to do from there. I'm Amanda Smith.